Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rucca. Mari Bergeron first arrived in Clatsop County as a baby in the arms of her parents, Jim and Bev Bergeron. Many know Mari's dad, Jim, as the OSU Extension Sea Grant agent at Astoria for 27 years. Many others know him as a teacher of Native American wood carving techniques, and he continues to pass along that knowledge to students at Astoria's Barbie Maritime Center.
I grew up over on Clatsop Plains, running around in the woods back there and on the beach. I went to the Warrenton schools. I believe I was one of the members of the last Warrenton class to go to the junior high school at Fort Stevens. And then we moved. My parents built a house out in the Napa area in Svensson. So we moved out there, and I went to eighth grade and to high school at the Napa schools.
Mari Bergeron left the area for school and work and some international adventure. But a few decades later, thanks to a rare text from her mom, Bev, Mari is back and serving as manager of community radio station KMUN as of November 1st.
We'd been talking for several years about me moving back here. I'd been away for quite some time, and, you know, I felt more and more like it was time to return. And one day, my mom texted me, which is a rare occurrence, so I knew it was important. And come to find, she had seen the advertisement for the KMUN station manager position in the Astorian, and she thought maybe I should do something about that. I did. I was on the phone to Susan Peterson as quickly as I could be. And, well, Roger, I guess you know the rest.
Well, take us through. You graduate from high school here, and then you go off into the world to sort of learn and make your fortune. So what happened after high school?
Well, after high school, I went off to college, financing with summers in the canneries here and then up at Kenai, Alaska. I graduated from the University of Oregon. You know, I can never quite decide, so I had to do a double major in international studies and Japanese. And then an opportunity came up to spend 2 years working in Japan, and I just couldn't pass that up. So I did move to Japan, to the western side of Japan, the city of Toyama. And wow, I had an amazing experience there for a young person, you know, working with the language and the people and getting out into the countryside. And yeah, that was really a life-changing experience.
Did you, the Japanese that you learned at the University of Oregon work for you immediately, or did it take a while?
Oh, that's such a funny question. You know, one learns the language in the textbook fashion. And yeah, being on the, as they call it, the backside of Japan was a little bit like perhaps somebody from Germany or France learning English and then stepping into the deep south. It wasn't that jarring, but yes, it was very different. I learned very quickly that I'd better pay close attention.
Now, Japan is organized a little differently than the U.S. There's a federal government, and then it's broken down into prefectures.
Prefectures, that's right, yes.
And they're not states exactly, and they're not cities, they're the second level of government.
That's right. Well, some of them are sort of city-states, like Tokyo and Kyoto, but the others are kind of in between a state and a county.
Mm-hmm. And you worked, when you were there, you were working for one of the prefectures, is that right?
That's correct. Yes, Toyama Prefecture.
I have to ask you how you got involved in international, the interest in international things. I mean, it was your major, and then immediately here you are overseas in Japan.
Well, you know, if you walk right across the street over to Fort George and read the plaque, you'll see the story of Ranald McDonald,
right,
who was a half-Native person from right here who developed an interest in Japan and just had to get over there and found a way. And I guess for whatever reason, I was not dissimilar. You know, we faced the Pacific. They faced the Pacific from the other side. Seemed like an interesting connection.
So after Japan, and you spent 2 years there, you came back and went back to school?
I did go back to school, yes. I had been interested in law as an undergrad, and I thought I would like to pursue that. So I sent out a few applications. To my great delight, Columbia accepted me. So that would have been the summer of 1993. That was the last year that I worked up in Alaska, you know, working on herring and halibut and salmon. I finished up that season, and then 3 days later, I was in Manhattan.
That's quite a change. Well, of course, you've already been a traveler, but
it was a jarring change. It was a more jarring change to me to go from here to New York City than it was to go from here to Japan.
And somewhere along the line, you became a law clerk as well.
That was my first job after graduating. That's right. So that took me up into the courthouse in beautiful Burlington, Vermont.
So you have your Doctor of Laws degree. You clerked for a magistrate judge. And then you find your way to Ipswich, Massachusetts. Is that correct?
Well, I worked in Ipswich, Massachusetts. I actually lived in Gloucester. Yeah, that's kind of a funny story, too. There are a lot of funny stories in life, aren't there,
I think,
Roger?
That's life, yes.
Yeah. Well, an interesting life has a lot of funny stories. So, yes, I was in Vermont, and I was admitted to the bar in New York and Massachusetts, so I figured I had to pick one, and I knew that New York City was quite expensive. So that gave me a little hesitation about just jumping back there. And of all things, I met some people from Gloucester at a music festival.
Mm-hmm.
And they encouraged me heartily to move to Gloucester. And I did.
Well, I didn't look up Gloucester, but I did look up Ipswich. And it struck me that for the time you spent there, you sort of moved to... In a way, either we are Ipswich West, or Ipswich is Astoria East in some ways, because it's a town that has buildings dating back to the 1700s. There are a lot of similarities, coastal town, mm-hmm. and so on.
That's exactly right, Roger. And I think if you'd looked up Gloucester, you would have found it even more so. I like to consider them as analogs. You know, if you substitute the lobster for Dungeness crab and the codfish for salmon, it's basically the same small drinking town with a fishing problem.
Well, while you were there, you were working as I'm understanding it, in the publishing industry. Tell us about that.
That is correct. Yes. I had the legal clerkship. I worked in some law firms in Boston, and it wasn't a great fit for me. Not as creative as I wanted, and just the role I was in wasn't very comfortable. And I met somebody who was involved in legal publishing, and it seemed like a great segue. You know, they happened to be hiring, and so I moved over into that. And that was with the company that is now Thomson Reuters.
Mm-hmm.
It was West Publishing at the time. So I had a really great career there.
And you got back into international work.
Well, I did. After that, when I segued over to EBSCO Publishing, yeah, that was not so much the legal work anymore, although, well, it was, because I was dealing with contracts day in and day out. But in that case, I moved into a job where my territory was what the company called rest of world. Which people outside the United States found absolutely hilarious. So my responsibility was to license content from academic publishers, so articles and journals and things, books, so that EBSCO Publishing could use that content in products that they then resold into the academic market for the most part. And I had a staff located in different countries, and it gave me the opportunity literally to go around the world. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
Managing internationally like that strikes me as both a fascinating and difficult thing to do because you're dealing with different cultures, different attitudes, different mores, different everything.
Oh, but Roger, that's the fun of it. You know, you never stop learning. Every minute, you know, whether it be, you know, the Muslim feasts, the Eids that follow the fast, or whether it be Zulu mourning customs, or, you know, there's just so many things. There was always something to learn about and to try to understand and to put together. And I was so fortunate to have a group of people who were really willing to do that with each other as well as with me. And, you know, when we got together in person, it was literally like a family reunion of, you know, getting all the cousins together.
How did you get across the language barriers, or were there any?
Well, you know, they all spoke English. Mm-hmm. So our common language was English, which, you know, made it ridiculously easy for me. I felt a little guilty sometimes. We did run into little things from time to time. And every once in a while, there would be a term or a gesture or something that would cause me to pause and say, wait a minute, what did you really mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, isn't a bad thing to carry over into conversation with English speakers, too.
Absolutely. Is it difficult at all coming back from the world, which is sort of where you were, back to your little corner of Northwest Oregon?
Well, you know, there was that little matter of COVID that clipped my wings. You know, once the international travel came to a halt, you know, then I really got to think about, well, if I'm not doing this, what do I want to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, more and more I thought about family and the fact that, you know, no matter how many countries and cities I might have the good fortune to visit, I actually always compared them to here.
Hmm.
So I figured maybe that means that Clatsop County is home.
Mm-hmm. And that's not an unusual story, that people move away and come back in their, you know, in their later years after they've sort of done what they wanted to do. And
that's right. In some regions, they call that a U-turn. And I suppose that's what I've made.
You also spent quite a bit of time working at a food pantry, didn't you, as a volunteer?
Well, as a volunteer and then as an employee as well. Yeah, that very timely topic, really. Over really a number of years, I was a volunteer at a place called The Open Door in Gloucester, Massachusetts, which is a local food pantry. They serve a 10-town region. This is going to sound very big. They have about 70 people on staff, not all full-time, and also because they have a thrift store as well that supports the food pantry's work. So, yeah, I was in the development office there after I went on to the staff. And I'm thinking a lot of them, of course, right now, as well as our local food pantries here, which I'm sure are just in a whirlwind trying to supply everyone as much as they can.
Yeah, really tough time. A lot of scrambling happening and a lot of wondering how they're going to cover the gaps.
Certainly.
So let's talk radio. Let's talk KMUN. So what have you been doing to kind of immerse yourself in the issues, the joys and the issues of KMUN? How's that gone so far?
Certainly, Roger. The first week, really, all I wanted to do was listen. I realized that I was coming in here to, you know, a wonderful staff and a core of volunteers who knew a lot more than I did. You know, of course, I remember listening to KMUN and even a little bit of volunteering here many years ago, but, you know, I needed to know what was going now. And if you need to know what people are doing, you go and ask them.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat in each of the staff members' offices and asked them questions and just let them tell me. And I've also been trying to meet as many volunteers as possible so I can learn about, you know, their motivations, their concerns, their desires, you know, all of these things are super important to me. I see my role as being in the background and supporting everyone else. So that does require me to learn what everybody else is doing, so that I can understand their contributions and so that I can find ways to put myself in the right position to, be the peer that holds up the dock.
Mm-hmm. Meeting volunteers is going to take a while since there are over 100 of us.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing, and it's something to be that I think we should be proud of. And we have a small but mighty staff and a whole lot of volunteers that kind of keep things going. And it occurs to me that we're a vestige of something that used to exist more, but we are actually live radio for the most part. We have actual human beings talking to you on the air every day. We're not automated. We're not...
We are algorithm-free.
We are there. So that's another thing that I think, that along with being non-commercial, that I'm really proud of here. So, problems at KMU, and one big problem that I think most people are aware of right now is that federal funding for community and public radio has been cut, has been ended. And so some stations are floundering, some are not making it, some are finding ways to adapt and survive. KMUN has been extremely lucky to have really great support from the community. The last pledge drive we did was actually the largest one ever in terms of response. But we're going to have to make that continue and find other sources of income. So the first... You have walked in at interesting times, as people say, and one of the initial things is going to be funding. Are you forming any ideas of?
I certainly am. I do come in at interesting times. I told the board when they interviewed me, a person would probably have to be crazy to come in at this time, and here I am. I guess they appreciated that. Yeah, a lot of decisions had already been made when I came in. It was not an easy decision to pivot away from the NPR content that we had, but it was a necessary one at the time. And I do support it wholeheartedly. There's been so much disruption, so much change, and for the most part, I think it's working out very well. Community response so far has been very understanding and very positive. Katie and Skylar are doing amazing work to develop news programming that informs and enriches the community. And the wonderful volunteers that we have been willing to change and rearrange and restructure and continue to make things work. No, I'm not going to change a single thing about the ship report. It is going to stay right there. But yeah, the loss of funding is not a one-time event. That it's something that perhaps started on a particular day, but that is ongoing. So we are going to continue to need support from the community, including individuals, including businesses. If you are an individual who would like to talk to us about ways of supporting and maintaining KMUN, give us a call and talk to Liz Talley. If you are a business and you would like to find ways to advertise or underwrite or appear in our paper online publication, The Current, Andy Eddy would love to hear from you. And we can find ways where we can support each other.
I think for businesses, being a sponsor at KMUN is really a wise decision because you're reaching an audience that is not reachable in many other ways. And we don't really do commercials, so there's none of that annoyance with the 17th drug commercial in a row. But people do get to know you through your messages on KMUN, and I think there's a respect that goes along with it because people who listen to KMUN tend to love KMUN.
That's absolutely right. And so if the community knows that you are a KMUN supporter, that already gives you a very positive impression. and might put you ahead of some of your competitors on their shopping list or their to-do list.
So aside from raising funds, the station has had to adapt. And again, I'm proud of this, the staff, because they have sort of taken it as an opportunity as much as a challenge. Mm-hmm. And they are looking for ways that they can make things better in the process. In some cases, that's, well, in all cases, it's a challenge. But in for the news department in particular, I mean, news used to be what I did. That was my business for about 17 years in TV and radio. And news takes bodies. It takes hands and fingers. It takes people being where things are happening. And Katie Frankwitz, who's our news director, is sort of trying to fill a lot of those spaces by herself. I guess I'm hoping, I know there are some other old hands around town who used to be professional journalists. And I'm hoping some of them will come, raise their hands and come forward and maybe cover a story now and then.
Yes, if you have experience and training in journalism, we would love to hear from you at this time. You know, for those of you out in the community, us civilians who have not been in journalism, you know, it seems like, well, you know, it's just saying what happened or what's going to happen. I mean, what could be so hard about telling us what happened? But it took only about 5 minutes of talking to Katie for me to think of the metaphor of cooking spinach. You know, you start with a great big bushel and it seems like a lot, and then you cook it and you've got just a tiny amount. And news collecting is very much like that. You know, there's lots of information out there, but making it into good quality news that people want to listen to and that's useful for the community is a very laborious process, and you end up with, you know, just a few minutes of content after, you know, many, many hours of labor.
And yes, and there are other things that you learn when you do it for a living in terms of attribution. We want to know where information comes from. We want to make sure that we are being fair, that we are being even-handed, that we are considering all points of view as much as possible. And somebody who's just doing it online or in social media, that doesn't have any of those constraints, and so it's a little unsure about what it is that you're hearing and whether it's accurate and whether there's a particular point of view driving it. And so KMUN wants to stay away from that. We want the news that you hear on KMUN to be trustable.
Absolutely right. You know, we want to be an authoritative source for you, for what's going on in this community. You know, for international news and national news, there are multiple places that you can go. We want to be that, but there are multiple sources. But for the local news, you know, that's affecting your life at this time, you know, we want to be the ones who provide a service that you just can't find anywhere else. And I think Katie and Skylar are doing an amazing job of that.
And for the music programming, I know we have a great program director who is doing his very best to make sure that we are adapting in the best way we possibly can there and serving all different audiences, including younger people.
That's right. Jack Harris is, you know, he is very engaged. He's very thoughtful. You know, he's thinking a lot about getting a balance. You know, he has to find programmers who are willing to do a whole variety of programs and keep them within, you know, within the format of what we're able to do here, which is quite a lot. It's amazing. We have a community that wants to hear classical. We have a community that wants to hear things that are a little more contemporary, perhaps. There's a lot to balance, and there are wonderful people out there who step in and, you know, day after day, provide music that just makes you think and say, wow, I didn't know that was out there. That's amazing.
I want to ask you a question that I know is really critical to anyone who moves to or moves back to this area. Have you found a place to live?
Almost. I don't want to jinx myself. Let's say that I'm working a couple of angles.
This has become such a difficult thing for the people who want to move here, and actually for the community in general, because, you know, the city of Astoria, for example,
hires people for positions that are critical for the city, and in some cases they have not been able to find a place to live and have not been able to take the job. So it's not a light question. It's actually a serious issue that we have right now, and affordable housing, of course, is on top of that a more serious issue.
Absolutely right, yes.
Our former mayor, Arlene Lemire, commented at one point that if she didn't already have her house, she could not afford to live here. She could not afford to buy a house here, and that's a hard place to be in, particularly for young people.
It is, yeah. You know, I don't know what the solution is off the top of my head, but we do have to think about how do we allow people to stay here who grow up here and want to remain and keep contributing.
Let me ask if there are things that you would like people to know about you that I haven't asked about.
I guess the first thing is that if you have an opinion about KMUN, what we play, what we do, how we should go forward, I would like to hear from you. You know, we can't make every change that everybody would like, but we can certainly listen and balance things, and I really appreciate everyone's engagement. One thing I'd like to say for to the staff and the volunteers and our closest supporters is just to acknowledge that they have been through a huge spasm of change with the CPB cuts and with the programming changes we've had. I want to acknowledge that. You know, going forward, of course, there will be changes. I mean, change just happens. Everything changes. If you're not changing, you're going backwards, and we can't do that. But I was thinking of the apocryphal quote, you know, the man goes to his barber and says, give me a haircut so only you and I know I've had a haircut. I think that's how I'd like changes here to look for a little while anyway. Let's keep it gentle, but let's keep ourselves moving forward. I know Roger is trying to get me to talk about myself. I want to talk about KMUN instead. I guess one thing that I would throw out there is that over the last 5 years, I've gotten quite into pottery. I'm a wheel thrower. And so I am looking to meet other people who are interested in pottery and maybe have a kiln that they aren't using.
You are going to find some kindred spirits here.
I know that. Score. Yes, know. There's quite a community.
Well, thanks very much for talking with me. We've been speaking with Mari Bergeron, who, as of November 1st, became the new manager for KMUN. Mari, thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger.